Odprti termin Radio Študent.
Zmagovalci Tabor Film Festa. Konec prvega julijskega tedna se je v dvorcu Veliki Tabor v Hrvaškem Zagorju odvil 15. Tabor Film Festival. O začetkih in razvoju festivala smo se že pogovarjali z Nenadom Borovčakom. Intervju za Radio Študent lahko prisluhnete oziroma intervjuju lahko prisluhnete na spletni strani. Danes pa namenjamo čas zmagovalcem. Dvorec Veliki Tabor se nahaja tako rekoč pljunek čez slovensko mejo, nekje med pod Četrtkom in Kumrovcem, ob kraju Desinič. V istem kraju, kjer naj bi po dvodnevnem sojenju v sodu vode utopili Veroniko Deseniško, v katero se je zaljubil Fridrik Celski. Mimo grede, Veroniko so sodniki oprostili čarovništva, za katerega jo je obtožil Fridrikov oče, Herman Celski, ki mlade ljubezni ni podpiral. Vseeno jo je oče dal ubiti, Friderika pa zakleniti v stolp, v katerega je v 4 letih na obisk prišel le dnevni obrok. Sodeč po muzeju, ki se v gradu nahaja, je zgodba resnična. Z navdihom iz resničnega življenja se je poigraval tudi Diogo Costa Amarante, eden od gostov festivala, ki je svojim dokumentarnim filmom nastopil v mednarodnem tekmovalnem programu. Gre za film z naslovom Majhno mesto ali v originalu Ciudad Pequeña oziroma Cidade Pequeña, ki je na letošnjem Berlinalu prejel Zlatega medveda za najboljši kratki film. Ujeli smo ga med pogovorom, ki je sledil projekciji.
Diogo Costa Amarante, the director of a second film that you saw in the competition. First question that I have to ask you
about the format, one of the strangest formats that I've ever seen. Why did he decide to do it in that format and how did he do it technically?
And I was explaining to him that actually many times in the film it's two full frames together, so that gives a sensation that it's wider than the wide lens. And they are like masked in between. So that's what gives that format. If you reduce a full frame to 50% and another one to 50% and put it together in the middle of the screen, you have this format, which is wider than the wide lens would be. And the rest of the film had to match with a mask. So it's like five moments that are actually two frames playing together.
I think so.
Mm. One question. So it's basically a false widescreen.
It is a false widescreen. It's two full frames reduced
to a crop size.
They are not cropped. They are like full frames. But if you reduce 50%, they will be in the middle of the screen and do a 100%. It's not the other ones that are not two frames. Those are cropped they match.
But it's actually wider than widescreen.
Yes, because it's two full frames.
But you use this mirror effect only a couple of times.
So it's like five times.
How did you get an idea to do it? How did that came?
It was when I started to shoot. For example, I think the one that said it has to be like this, it was the bridge. The yellow bridge? So that one I really wanted to have the double of it in different times. So that the sensation is one side and another. So from here I started to
think about
like how to create kind of like a leitmotif. Not a leitmotif, but like a repetition of this kind of structure.
The other maybe also usual question is, so this film feels for me like a complete fiction, but actually it's not. So can you say which parts are documentary ones? I know that the girl and the boy are actually your family.
Yeah.
So can you say something about the documentary part?
Mm-hmm. First, the story really happened. Everything I'm saying, it was a conversation I had with my sister, and I brought it to the screen. Because I was living just outside the country of Portugal 8 years. I lived 4 years in Spain and 4 years in the US. Then I came back, and of course my sister was telling me all the stories about my nephews. Oh, it happened, this happened, and then she told me this story specifically, like, oh, you cannot imagine what happened, like this guy in the middle of the night started to knock my door and say, like, I can't sleep because I have this chest pain. So she went to the doctor, everything is fine. She's like, what's going on with this guy? And one day she went to talk with the teacher, and I don't know, for me it was such a beautiful, natural thing happening. It was a big turning point in that kid. And talking with the professor, she said, like, oh yeah, I noticed that when I was saying this, when I got to this point, all the kids were okay, but Federico, he literally, like, he blanked. So she felt the transition in him. And I immediately wanted to grab that and bring it to the screen. So that part is completely documentary. The other one is it's my nephew, my sister, and all the images you see are actually from the surroundings of the small town I was born and raised. So it was a mixture of, you know, real things with direction behind our feet of bringing them to spaces that I really wanted to shot.
And that's your voice in the...
It's not my voice, everybody thinks it is, because might not look like, but I'm a little bit shy, and I knew if I put my voice, I would never watch the film. So I found a guy with a similar voice, I wrote a text, and I recorded it. I think, like, all my films, I'm not saying it because it sounds a little bit arrogant, but it's not, but I think it's very spontaneous. I like to go with a really, like, visual intuition mixed with the concept. So it was all about colors, compositions, like the rear view. What I really loved about it is, like, the possibility to have this kid sleeping while something's happening in front of him.
These scenes were shot, it was not superimposed after it was
part,
yeah. Okay.
That also, it's two full frames together.
Ah, okay.
So part of it I had to match with the bull coming, and then so there's a lot of, like, composition, the kids sleeping, and everything to match the timings. Yes, there's a lot of composition there.
Some more questions?
Yes. What's up with the exploding heads?
Yeah, that's another one. You have two options in the film, at least my idea, which is explain immediately what the film is about, and the other option is put you in a world that you see a kid seeing, like, things exploding, a woman with a head exploding, and after you realize it's a film about the kid that discovered death, or the conscience of death. So you're already in the mood prepared to listen to that story. So the idea for me was first getting to this world of a kid that suddenly starts to see the world differently, and then you realize why.
But Snake explodes before the explanation of
exactly.
What he saw.
So he's looking at nature, he's looking at things that, you know, it's almost a call, because when she's cutting his hair, which for me is kind of like growing up, he listens to a snake, right? He looks at the snake is in the stones, and she's making this sound, it's like a call for something, like he's waking up for something. But at the same time, he's imagining as a child how it starts to represent death, the end of things, and it's a little bit like over the top.
For me, even more interesting was the actions, the things that this woman does before she gets shot, you know, with these repetitions. Maybe you don't notice it when you watch it first time, but since I now watch it for, I think, the third time, then I knew what would happen with her head, so I was watching her.
Again, like, it was completely, not even intellectual, it was super instinct. When I saw the woman doing that, that was actually, it's a swimming pool that's, like, public nearby my small town, the only one that's in the surroundings, in the mountain. And I was shooting, like, documentary, regular.
I saw it.
And somehow that movement for me was a loop. There was something about it.
It was, yeah.
And immediately I wanted to do, like, a GIF.
Mm-hmm.
And to create this woman that stays locked in a movement. But there's a part of her that goes on. But afterwards, that thing has to explode because it's
stuck.
Exactly, she's stuck in a moment. She has to get out.
Why did you film it in your town? Were you, like, homesick? You said you were 8 years away from Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you pick the scenes from your small town?
Because, again, it's my family. It's a story that's connected with my family. Somehow I felt related to that story because I remember. For me, the film somehow had to do the second part of the voiceover. It's talking about telling the truth,
mm-hmm.
parents, between parents and children. And there's a lot of things connected with this small town that for me personally has to do with that. So it was kind of like, I don't know, an instinct to go to places that really, like, were important in my childhood. For example, the last image of the building, it's actually, it's not from the caravan, but it's the view I had as a child in my room to this massive building. And I don't know, I decided to incorporate a lot of that house where you see, where she's picking the fruits.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be actually a house where, when I was a kid, we would go there with the fake things because it was abandoned, but with everything inside. And we, the kids, would say that there's a dead body inside, and we'd go like, you know, like all painted and like, ooh. So like all these, I don't know, things that for me kind of like touched my childhood. That's why there's also like a little thing, like when you have the cops dancing, there's also like a personal thing there, like kind of like a personal message about what's growing up in this kind of small city.
So you saw cops dancing like that when you were a kid, or?
No. I think it has more to do with how these kind of places really like connect with homophobia. So for me, there was a space there to bring an element of a kid dreaming and connected elements that they are really connected with, like male, you know, figure,
mm-hmm.
and put them dancing and elevate the thing. So for me, basically, it's two parts: is kid discovering. And then mom realizing kid is growing up, and she herself catching life again. She goes and meets a lover. So it's kid, my son discovered that death exists. She realizes he's growing up. She goes back to life and connects with a lover. And it's a lover that lives in a caravan. I don't know, for me it's all about movement, time passing. That's why she said, like, I wish I was a nomad like you, to see reality distorted by motion. As if she didn't want to see that time is passing in the sun. And at the same time, the way she has to connect with life and grab life is to just have a lover, a physical body.
How your family like?
Mixed feelings. So my sister, because she's not an actress at all, she's like obsessed with the film, because suddenly she's like everywhere the film won awards. So it's like pictures on TV and she's like, wow. She worked in an office, so for her it was like, wow. And my nephew, it was super funny because he's like the face of it everywhere. So he went to school like the superstar. Like, and when I arrived from Berlin and he got the award, he was waiting for me in the airport. I was like, no, no, the bear is mine. He was serious about it. I was like, wow. But another part of the family somehow, you know, sees things there like, it's a little bit weird. So then not all find it cute.
Na Tabor Film Festu Diogo nagrade ni dobil. Kdo so bili prejemniki nagrade in posebnih omemb, nam je v pogovoru za Radio Študent povedala filmologinja Maja Krajnc, članica letošnje mednarodne žirije.
Za začetek bi te mogoče poprašala, kakšen se ti je zdel splošen vtis filmov mednarodnega izbora, pri katerem si kot žirantka tudi sodelovala letos?
Te program je bilo uvrščenih 28 filmov različnih zvrsti, čeprav ne bi mogli ravno trditi, da so povsem sodili v določene kategorije, skratka igrani, dokumentarni, eksperimentalni, animirani. Po večini so kar prehajali. Zdi se pa mi, da je Ivan Ramljak kot selektor kar nekako zasledoval trende, ki so se vzpostavili recimo na Berlinalu, potem sledil je Rotterdamu. Skratka, veliko filmov je bilo prikazanih na nekih teh filmskih festivalih, ki jih kar cenimo. No? Tako da izbor se mi je zdel kar domišljen. Tudi zdi se mi, da ni bilo tako večje zastopanosti recimo azijskega filma ali pa da bi gledali sem evropski film, kar mi je bilo zelo všeč. Morda bi si kot žirantka želela, da bi bilo prisotnih tudi v mednarodnem programu kaj domačih, a ne, izdelkov. Ti so bili pač rezervirani za kategorijo domačega filma in valjda je o tem odločila druga žirija. Sem pa zaradi vsesplošnega dobrega vzdušja pač ta recimo domači program izpustila. Ampak zadovoljna pa sem z mednarodnim delom vsekakor.
Pa verjetno predvsem zmagovalci, ki ste jim podarili.
Ja. V bistvu, ne, po mojem mnenju, tako še vsaj trem lahko dali posebno omembo, ampak seveda, ker smo bili pač v ekipi žirije trije in sicer poleg mene še Michael Pattison, cenjen britanski kritik, avtorica animiranega filma Renata Gašorovska, smo šli na to, a ne, da za temi tremi, ki smo jih nagradili, smo zares vsi trije stali, ne? Torej, če imel kdo kakršnikoli tudi manjše zadržke podelitvi nagrade, pač film moral odpasti, pri teh treh pa smo se zares strinjali.
Kateri pa so bili potem ti trije, ki so prejeli nagrado? Mogoče, če bi lahko za vsakega malo obrazložila.
Ok, mogoče začnem kar z glavnim nagrajenim. Ne? To je Kaput nemških avtorjev Aleksandra Lacha in Volkerja Schlechta. Pardon, nemščina mi ne gre najboljš, tako da se opravičujem za izgovor. Jaz se pol imam še Filipince, kar bo verjetno še večja zagonetka, ampak dober. No, tale Kaput se nam je zdel izredno zanimiv, zato zdaj, če bi ga želeli nasilno uvrstiti v neko kategorijo, bi seveda rekel, da gre za animirani dokumentarc. Ampak, če izkušamo znotraj tega polja pogledati, ne, kaj ta film prinaša, je zares čistnikom svojstveno in formiranje, oblikovanje človeškega telesa ali pa nekako razvoja skozi neko obdobje, skozi čist formalistično gledano cikle oziroma rutine, ki so jih ujetnice oziroma zapornice na vzhodu Nemčije, rutine, ki so jih izvajale pravzaprav vsak dan. Film temelji na njihovih pričevanjih in s temi ciklusi, ponavljanjem ene in iste rutine, ne, ter z glasom Wofu, ki pripoveduje pravzaprav o tem, kaj je nastajalo, kako so preživljali ta čas. Se zdi, da se vzpostavlja čist neka nova, nevidena, ne, simbioza. In jaz mislim, da je, recimo, če razmišljam še zmeraj v okvirih animiranega dokumentarca, da bi tale film lahko pomenil neko prihodnost za ta žanr, za to kategorijo, recimo.
Je pa po vsebini pravzaprav precej podoben tistemu, ki je bil v istem programu, ki pa govori o moški perspektivi, ki pa je bil pravzaprav tako narejen, da se je glas ni povezoval direktno sliko, ki smo jo videli.
Res je, se tukaj tudi, ne, zdaj ne moreš reči, ja, se vzpostavlja, ne, simbioza, ne. Ne gre pa za to, recimo, da bi voiceover oziroma glas v offu narekoval ritem podobe. Tukaj preprosto, mislim, ta deluje kot celota, ne? Ta drug, moška perspektiva, pa moram reči, da ni mi bil slab film, ne? Po drugi strani pa nisem videla nekega presežka v njem. Tako da zato smo se odločili za Kaput.
Kaj pa še ostala dva filma, ki ste jih tudi nagradili?
Ostale dva sta pa Kili in Klaus Kinski iz Pirosa Stratolopulusa iz Kolumbije. Ta nam je bil valjda zelo všeč, ker se tako Kinski se pojavil mimo grede. Precej humoren način, moram reči. V filmu nastopi tudi Herzog, skratka gre za neko odo filmske umetnosti, ki pa na tak malo samo ironičen način naslavlja prav ta mit, ki se je ustvaril znotraj nekih velikih umetnikov, mislecev in tako naprej. Zelo zanimivo.
Kaj pa po sami formi se je tudi razlikoval od ostalih videnih?
Ja, tukaj bi lahko rekel, da je šlo za neke vrste dokumentarc. Posnet naj bi bil v enem kadru, a ne? Čeprav tukaj se je tako z Michaelom razvila celo teorijo, da pač temu ne verjameva, ne? Ampak tudi, če ni bil posnet v celem kadru, deluje fenomenalno.
Kateri je bil pa potem še tretji?
Tretji nagrajeni, torej prejšan, Kili in Klaus Kinski in filipinski film If People Such As We Cease to Exist, Sheila Anne May Manaska, filipinske avtorice. Oba ste dobila posebno omembo. Le Kaput je prejel denarno nagrado, mislim, da gre za 500 evrov ali pa nekaj podobnega. No, tale filipinski, pa tako, jaz sem velika oboževalka Diaza, pa tudi mlajše generacije, Raja Martin, John Torres, Count de la Cruz, čeprav slednji še najmanj, so mi precej zanimivi. Film na trenutke spomnite tudi na samo ustvarjanje njihovega predhodnika Briljanteja Mendoze. Ta pa tako nekako že samo uvodno sekvenco zariše samo središče, srž dogajanja. Po mojem je tam končni fazi dosegel to posebno omembo zaradi svoje strukture, domišljenega prepleta elementov. Pinski film se mi zdi, da v splošnem sledi ali pa vsaj želi nekako doseči vztrajnost pogleda pri gledalcu. Tukaj sicer imamo kratko formo, se ne, da so vsi filipinski filmi zdaj dolgi minimalno 6 ur kot filmi Lava Diaza, ampak že tukaj se mi zdi, da s tem ponavljanjem in tako minimalno gradnjo, a ne, doseže neko vztrajnost pogleda, ne glede na to, da film traja nekaj minut pravzaprav.
No, niso pa bili ti sodobni kratki filmi edino, kar smo videli na festivalu. Videli smo naprimer tudi barvne različice Georgea Méliéja.
Aha, tukaj pri barvih naj omenim sem to, da seveda gre za primarno črno-bel film, ne, ki ga je že sam veliki umetnik, pionir eksperimentalnega filma Georges Méliès. V bistvu barval je filmski trak, ne? Mislim, skratka, naknadno je določene elemente pobarval, oziroma verjetno je imel tudi pomagače, bi rekla.
Se pravi, v originalu ni bil tako pobarvan, kot zdaj, ko smo ga mi gledali?
Jaz mislim, da so vseeno sledili obstoječim negativom, ne? Kolik vem, se takrat, mislim, da je to restaurirala Pariška kinoteka, če se ne motim, in oni so si zelo prizadevali slediti Méliéju. Restaurirano kopijo, recimo Potovanja na Luno, ima tudi zdaj že kar nekaj let tudi slovenska kinoteka in gre za prav to isto različico, a ne? Tako da jaz bi rekla, da so se skušali približati, zdaj pa nimam pa dovolj znanja o arhiviranju, restauriranju, da bi sploh lahko pametovala o tem, tako da raj ne bi, a ne? Moram pa reči, da na tem prostoru, skratka gradu, trdnjavi, kjer se je odvilo, mislim, da so trije Méliéjevi filmi so se odvili, tak posrečen izbor dokaj, je bilo res posebno doživetje gledati in te različice Méliéja, ki so se pa odvijale ob fenomenalni spremljavi Godal, tako da božansko. Grad seveda pa trdnjava pa sta ustvarila tako neko pravlično vzdušje in pol te Méliéjeve kreature, on v svojih filmih, posnel jih je čez 500, ampak velik tega sploh ni več ohranjenega in srečna sem, da jih je vsaj nekaj, a ne? No, on na veliko uporablja razno razne kreature, recimo, ki spomnijo na 1000 milj pod morjem, veliko se dogaja tudi v vesolju in to mi je pač fenomenalno sodilo prav ta prostor. Čeprav dobro, filmi se niso vrteli iz kopija, ne? Ampak temu lahko zamžimo pač na eno oko. Imeli smo nad seboj zvezde, pa res odlično spremljavo. Trkač pa všeč mi je, da so se vrnili prav k Méliéju, ker zares velja, kot sem omenila, za prvega eksperimentalista. On je bil tisti, recimo, ki je iz gledališča upeljal določene gledališke trike pol vsem film, ampak ne na način, da nimam v mislih sem kulis, recimo, to zaresni trik. On je imel te trike, prva izginotja, recimo, čarovnik se spremenil mačko in podobno. Pol fenomenalno mi je, da filmi z prejšnjega stoletja, samega začetka prejšnjega stoletja, delujejo kritično. Recimo tako, sprašujejo se, kaj počnejo ti znanstveniki na Luni, ne? Uničujejo oko, bal, da so invazivni, agresivni. Pa ne nazadnje, ta njegov studio, ne, je kasneje postal prototip evropskega filmskega studija. On je imel tako stekleno vrtno lopo, v kateri je najprej ustvarjal za iluzionistično gledališče, ampak malo po teh prvih projekcijah v Parizu leta 96 je preprosto vedel, da si mora nekako, on je v bistvu predelal kinematograf v kamero. Tako da vedel je skratka, da mora nabaviti kamero in začeti ustvarjati filme.
Kljub poklonu torej velikemu eksperimentatorju pa je bilo vendar zelo, zelo malo ali pa skoraj da nič eksperimentalnih filmov v naboru mednarodnega programa.
Kot sem omenila na samem začetku, a ne, veliko je bilo filmov, ki so jih pač mogoče malo nasilno dodelili v neke kategorije v smislu filmske zvrsti. Lahko bi pa rekla, da recimo dokumentarci, ki smo jih videli, bi v veliki meri lahko bili tretirani tudi kot eksperimentalni filmi. Morda ni šlo recimo za eksperimentiranje v smislu Takashija Makina ali pa koga podobenega, tudi Maje Deren, recimo, če se vrnem desetletja nazaj, ne. Šlo je pa recimo za eksperimentiranje, kaj pa vem, bil je en skandinavski film, kjer so se snemali ljudje, ki so stali na 10-metrski skakalnici. In na samem začetku so se sem zvrstile te figure, dokaj na hitro, pol je pa kamera, pravzaprav statična kamera, počivala na njih in pač ujemala ta njihov strah, se podati v ta skok ali ne. Mislim, jaz bi tudi to predelila, veš, kot nekaj eksperimentalnega. Melje pa predvsem pri posebnih učinkih, a ne, je bil pionir in eksperimentator.
Torej, splošen vtis je ostal dober.
Ja, poleg filmskega programa moram reči, da je tudi odličen glasbeni program, dobra družba, sproščeno vzdušje. Tokrat smo imeli mogoče malo nesreče ali pa sreče, kakor vzameš z vročino. Bilo je zelo, zelo vroče. Takrat pa res prijeten, pa tak osvežujoč festival, dokaj.
Torej, ponovno naslednje leto.
Yes.
Maja, hvala.
Hvala tebi.
Več o filmih lahko izveste že v recenziji Petre Meterc ob 13. uri, ker pa Tabor Film Fest ni le filmski festival, vam lahko naslednjič poročamo še o bogatem glasbenem programu, katerega del poslušate tudi v podlagi. Na Tabor Film Festivalu se je s kokoškami zbujala Pina N.
Odprti termin Radio Študent.